You are listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN. This program is made possible through an unrestricted educational grant from GlaxoSmithKline and is brought to you in part from the Institute for Criminal Justice Healthcare, the American Correctional Association, and the National Sheriff's Association.
Good afternoon. I am Dr. Elizabeth Desideria Gondels, and I'm your host for the next 20 minutes as we explore hepatitis and corrections on the front line. Joining me today is Dr. Jeffrey Beard, Secretary for the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections. Dr. Beard and his pioneering correctional health care team have successfully pulled together the Pennsylvania legislature, state public health officials, correctional health care providers, and pharmaceutical vaccine divisions, community residents, and the Centers for Disease Control to aggressively stop the spread of hepatitis in the state of Pennsylvania. Dr. Beard, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Because our time is so short and we have so much to cover on this important issue, I'm going to get right to this critical healthcare issue with my first question. Dr. Beard, for your peers that are listening right now, why should they care about preventing and controlling viral hepatitis in their facilities?
Well, Elizabeth, there's a number of good reasons why they should care. First, we have a very high percentage of individuals in the correction system that have hepatitis. In fact, in Pennsylvania, over 25% of our inmates have hepatitis C, and if we added in A and B, I'm sure we would find the numbers would even be higher. I know that other states have higher percentages of those with hepatitis C. So if you have a disease that one quarter of your population has, I would think it would be pretty important to deal with that problem. A second reason is that it's a real public health threat. Many people don't realize, but most of our inmates are going to be returning to the community someday, and if we haven't dealt with the hepatitis while they're with us, they're going to take that back into the community.
Dr. Baird, you said that most of the inmates will be returning to the community. Could you just expand a little bit on that?
Well, what we know is that 90% of the inmates that we have in our system will eventually return back to the community. Nationwide, we release some 6,000 inmates each year, and in Pennsylvania alone, we release 11,000.
Wow, that is a lot of inmates going back to the community. I can understand why that you want to look at prevention.
Absolutely. Another good reason that we should take a look at dealing with the hepatitis problem is that we know that about 20% of the inmates or of the people who have hepatitis C are going to eventually have complications. Today, we can treat those people with hepatitis C for about a cost of about $6,000 to $12,000. If we don't treat them today, a fair percentage of them will end up having complications, and the treatment of those complications can range anywhere from $50,000 to $250,000 or more.
Let me see if I understand you correctly. Did you say complications of treatment could run up in dollars as high as $250,000? Dollars per person?
Well, yes, they certainly can, Elizabeth, because a certain percentage of those people with complications will require liver transplants. And once you get into transplants, you're going to be getting into easily $250,000 or more. Another good reason to look at the hepatitis problem is last year, some 17% of our inmate deaths were as a direct result of hepatitis C complications. I would expect that other states probably have similar problems, similar numbers, and if we don't deal with the problem, it's going to continue to grow. And I think we should also realize that, we have a captive audience right now. There's no one other place in our society that we have such a concentration of people with hepatitis as we do in our prison system. And we can really make a major impact, we in corrections, if we stand up and deal with that problem. Our corrections healthcare departments, they're out on the front line of that issue. They can identify those with Hep C. They can vaccinate for A and B. And they can educate people and treat people. I think if they do all of this, we can help prevent the spread of hepatitis, outbreaks of A and B, and also prevent life-threatening complications from occurring.
Now, you mentioned that your correctional health care team has been deeply involved in this process. How involved do you think correctional health care across the country should be involved in this? What are you suggesting?
Well, there's a whole bunch of things that we can do. We can start and we can begin assessing inmates when they're first received in the system. And we can focus on just those that have symptoms of hepatitis or other disorders like AIDS that are most affected by hepatitis. Or we can take a broader view and we can test everybody and we can find out what the full extent of the problem is. We can establish programs to educate inmates and staff on the cause and effect of hepatitis, and we can begin with those who exhibit just the high-risk behavior, or we can begin with everybody.
Dr. Baird, you said you want to educate the inmates about the cause and the effect of hepatitis A, B, and C. What do you mean, educate inmates about the effect of hepatitis?
Well, what I mean by that is that to let the inmates know, and our staff know, that hepatitis can cause some very, very serious health problems, and it can result in death. And I think once people become aware of that, maybe they're a little more willing to deal with some of the high-risk behaviors that result in people getting hepatitis in the first place. Some of the other things that we can do is while we can't prevent hepatitis C, we can immunize for A and B. And again, we can immunize just those that have coexisting disorders, or we can decide we want to immunize everybody.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, you are suggesting to start immunizing for A and B inmates that have coexisting disorders like hepatitis C, HIV, and TB first, and then you eventually are suggesting to expand the prevention program to immunize all inmates for hepatitis A and B?
Well, yes, Elizabeth, that's certainly one thing that we can do and one way we can go about it. We may not have all the money that we would like to have to go do everybody at once. So what we would do is we would begin by focusing on those people who are most likely to have complications and serious problems as a result of the hepatitis. And those are the people with the coexisting disorders. Other things that can be done is that we can actively treat those with hepatitis C. It makes real sense to do that because the treatment today is getting much better. There's a much higher percentage of success than there was in the old days with some of the initial treatment that came out. And again, we have a range of options here. It can be expensive to treat everybody with hepatitis C, but you can limit yourself and just start dealing with those people who have symptoms or problems or coexisting disorders, and then later go and expand that treatment. And because of that, I think it's important that as we think about what we want to do and how we want to go about this whole thing, that we remember that everything that we do does have a cost consequence. And the more that we do, the more involved we get, the more costly it will be. But the good thing is that we have a whole range of options here. We don't have to just start and do everything at once. We can start on some things that cost very little, like education, for instance. And we can therefore begin addressing this problem even if we don't have all of the money that we would really like to have.
Well, Dr. Beard, is all this really necessary? Are inmates really at risk for contracting and spreading hepatitis A, B, and C?
Absolutely. As I said earlier, I don't think there's any other one place other than in our correctional facilities where we have such a large concentration of people who have hepatitis or people who are at substantial risk for contracting hepatitis. And they're a substantial risk for contracting it because they live with those who have it. We know that hepatitis is spread by high-risk behavior, illegal drug use, unprotected sex. We know in our correctional systems that we have a high percentage of people who have drug and alcohol problems. In fact, in Pennsylvania, we find that about 70% of our people have a drug and alcohol problem. So you have about 7 out of 10 of your people or inmates in your systems that have or will participate in some high-risk behavior that can increase their chance of either contracting or, if they have it, spreading this disease. And we also know that almost 3 out of every 10 of our inmates have some form of hepatitis. And those are real substantial numbers. Those are real big numbers that we need to deal with now. Because once we release them and send them back into the community, they're going to be lost in our society, and it's going to be much more difficult to address this issue.
You bring up a good point, that inmates are part of our community. So that's why you are so committed to working with the inmates, because you see your inmates and inmates across the country as part of the community residents, as one and the same.
Absolutely. You know, as I said earlier, we have to remember that most of these inmates are going to be coming home. And once they're released to our communities and our neighborhoods, we've really lost the chance that we've had to address this issue and do something that's important, something where we can really help society in general deal with what is really a very serious disease. And that's why I believe it's important that we take a very aggressive approach to protect society from this significant health problem.
For those of you who are just tuning in, we are speaking with Dr. Jeffrey Beard, the Secretary of the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections, about hepatitis and corrections on the front line. Dr. Beard, let's continue. Let's just take a little off from the front where you left off with your last question. I'm guessing that's why you feel prevention and not just treatment is so important for this program population. But you and I both know it's not all that simple to start a comprehensive program to deal with hepatitis. You've been through this in Pennsylvania. You've made some tough decisions. What are some of the obstacles you faced?
Well, you're right, Elizabeth. It is difficult. And I think what you have to do is you have to begin by, first of all, making people aware of the problem. And there's a substantial number of people in the country who really aren't aware of this problem. Once people are aware of the problem, they can start looking at ways that there are to deal with the problem and decide how they may want to deal with the problem. They then have to determine what their resources are and what they can practically do, because they may not have all of the resources to do everything that they want to do right in the beginning. We have to remember that many of our correctional agencies around the country probably also have contracted health care providers. And they're going to get some substantial resistance from those providers, because dealing with this disease is going to impact fiscally on those providers. So what you have to do to overcome that resistance is to involve them in the process in the beginning. You have to be reasonable with them, realize that they're in business, and that if you don't address it with them, if you don't involve them in the process, you're not only going to face more resistance from them, but you could actually drive them out of business. And yet, you have to recognize that dealing with hepatitis does represent a real change, and you may have to do some kind of a contract modification with them in order to keep things going.
But with the budget cuts across this country in corrections, you know as well as I do, state corrections across the country is facing massive budget cuts. How did Pennsylvania deal with the fiscal impact of this program, especially with the private health care providers and that extra cost that you would incur?
Well, I think in some ways we were lucky in a couple of accounts in Pennsylvania. We were lucky, first of all, because we began dealing with this back a couple years ago. And back then, the budgets weren't as tight as what they are today. I think if we were coming into the process today, we may have to adopt a more conservative approach and not be quite as aggressive as we're being in dealing with this problem. We were also lucky in Pennsylvania because our legislature understood the importance of dealing with this problem. And so we set it as a priority. It is maintained as one of our priorities, and the legislature knows it's a priority, and they support us. So I think on those accounts, we've been very, very, very lucky. Some other obstacles that you faced in trying to start a program is training. The training that you provide has to be broad-based. A lot of people need to be trained on the hepatitis problem. You have to start, obviously, with your medical staff and the healthcare providers. And then one of the things that makes it that much more difficult is our protocols keep changing. And so it's difficult to stay current with the changes and keep everybody in the field current with the changes as things sometimes rapidly evolve in how we deal with and how we treat this disease.
Dr. Baird, how did correctional staff handle this change? And what I mean by that is, especially in introducing prevention programs for inmates.
Well, actually, I think our healthcare staff dealt quite well with it, and the reason I think our healthcare staff did is because they want to do the right thing, and this is the right thing. The right thing is to deal with this problem and face it head on, and to address it. And I think because of that, and because that's what we were doing, we didn't have any problem with our healthcare staff dealing with it, and also dealing with the constant change that you have as protocols change and as treatments change. Some other things that you have to be aware of is that if you're developing a program, you also have to develop. Your educational program for the staff, for the inmates and the staff, and you have to train staff to carry that program out. There is a lot of stuff that has to be done. There's a lot of development, there's a lot of training, there's a lot of planning. And so one of the things that I think people have to be aware of as they start down the road of doing something here is that this is something that's going to take time, and they don't have to do everything today. They're not going to be ready to start tomorrow. It's probably going to take a year or more just to get some of the basics of this program started, and in fact, in Pennsylvania, it's taken us over 2 years. You know, because you have to decide first of all how you're going to proceed, and whether you have what resources you have that'll let you do what. You have to deal with resistance. You have to develop protocols. You have to develop programs, and then you have to implement this whole program. And there's an awful lot involved in that process.
But what specifically did Pennsylvania Department of Corrections do in addressing efforts for hepatitis among inmates? You had to deal with a lot of issues here, security side, the correctional health care side, but what was some of the specific efforts made?
In Pennsylvania?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what we decided some time ago that we were going to take a very aggressive approach in Pennsylvania to deal with this problem. And so we developed a broad-based hepatitis C protocol that deals with assessment, it deals with education, it deals with treatment, and it deals with prevention. We assess all of our new inmates who come into our system for hepatitis C. And then we have an education program for all inmates as well. And these are all the new inmates coming in get this program. We have some pamphlets and a video and an actual group discussion that takes place with trained staff that go over the causes and the effects of hepatitis for the inmates as they come into our system. Inmates who are that test positive for hepatitis also receive additional education at certain points in the protocol. When they get the test results back, there's additional education. When there's discussion of exclusionary criteria, because there's some people with certain mental health problems and certain physical problems that really have to be excluded from this treatment. And at the point of final decision, where the final decision is going to be made of whether we're going to treat or not treat it, all those points along the way, we give the inmates further education about the hepatitis problem. We then, once we decide who we're going to treat, we go ahead and we start the program, and we make every effort we can to keep them in the program until completion. And that's very important, because we believe that if somebody goes into treatment, out of treatment, that you're really going to reduce the overall effectiveness.
That's a good point. which you just said about treatment and keeping them in treatment. One thing that I would like to ask you, and time is running short here, but I think that if you could just briefly give the audience just a few steps in how to start the process and how to obtain funds to at least immunize inmates for hepatitis A and B with coexisting disorders like TB and HIV. Just a couple steps.
Well, I think the first thing I would do is I would start by providing an education program. You can start that fairly quickly. There's a lot of good pamphlets and videos and other literature around that could allow you to very rapidly get an education program going for the inmates and for your staff. And the other thing that I would do is I would go out and start working on trying to educate those people who provide the funds to you. I think if we can make them aware of just how much of a threat this is to society, how much the consequence of the cost of not treating would be, the fact that inmates are the largest segment within our population that have this disease, the fact that we can successfully treat for hepatitis C, the fact that we can vaccinate for A and B. I think once they come to understand those kinds of things, it might make it a lot easier for you to get the funding that you need to go ahead. And that's how I would start with this entire process.
Now, in your opinion, now just take off your hat as the Secretary of Corrections for the state of Pennsylvania and look at corrections on a national basis. In your opinion, what still needs to be done across this country in corrections to address hepatitis in this population?
Well, Elizabeth, you know, I think the first thing is I don't get a sense there's a real commitment out there to identify, treat, and prevent this disease. And the reason that there isn't a real commitment is that it is costly to fully and effectively deal with this problem, and most corrections departments do have limited resources and funding. There's no question that if you're going to go into a full-fledged vaccination program, full-fledged treatment program, it's going to cost you money. And I think people are seeing that, and they're just tending to ignore the problem. But I think they should realize that there isn't any reason to really ignore the problem, because that there are other things that they can do, things that aren't that expensive to get started to dealing with this very important problem. You know, the one thing I just mentioned was educating the inmates and educating those who provide funding to us. And remember that we can deal with this whole process incrementally. We don't have to start and again do everything overnight. We can start with the education programs. We can then start focusing on those people who are greatest risk, those people with coexisting disorders. We can just provide immunization eventually for them, and we can provide treatment for those people who are actually showing symptoms, and that's how we can start beginning the process of dealing with this. The other thing that I think is very important for us to remember is that, you know, most of these inmates are coming home, and there are some real significant continuity of care issues in dealing with both hepatitis B and C around the country. They're just really, the communities aren't ready to deal with it. I mean, if we haven't finished dealing with the problem when they come out, they aren't ready to continue that dealing with it. So we have to start working with other agencies and raise awareness in the community as well, because we in corrections cannot solve this problem alone. We really have to all work together collaboratively to see that this is dealt with.
Dr. Baird, I want to thank you for spending this time with us this afternoon. And I feel that you have given our listeners across this country excellent advice on how to begin the process of a total approach to addressing hepatitis in their own state correctional systems. This is Dr. Elizabeth Desiderio Gondels from the Institute for Criminal Justice Healthcare, bringing you corrections on the front line.
You are listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN. This program is made possible through an unrestricted educational grant from GlaxoSmithKline and is brought to you in part from the Institute for Criminal Justice Healthcare, the American Correctional Association, and the National Sheriff's Association.